RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
Tech Tuesday with Stephen Sykes. Hi, Stephen. How are you?
Hey, how you doing? Yeah, it's been a while, it feels like.
Oh, I hope it wasn't too tough for you to get through that week.
I had a chat with Alistair last Tuesday.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yep.
And, of course, there was a replay. So, you know, if I missed your voice too much, I could always just play those.
Oh, okay. Well, that's a relief. Of course, I'm stuck with my voice every day. Kind of get sick of it after a while.
I was going to say, it's a cross to bear, isn't it?
Oh, it is. Oh, yeah. anyway, it's great to be here in the South Island. I thought of you as I drove through Christchurch, but time was tight, Stephen, so I hope you don't think I was disrespecting you not getting in contact or swinging by. But
no, that's okay. I mean, you've moved overseas now, quite literally.
Well, I have, yeah. First time I've been on the ferry for about 30 years.
Yes.
Because you fly everywhere now, don't you?
Yes. The last time I went on the ferry, I think, was just a couple of years ago, actually.
Okay. Well, anyway, it reminded me of the old days, you know, the old rail ferries. But I went on the Blue Bridge this time, so because I didn't want to end up on the rocks. and that ferry's operating again, so it didn't take them long to turn it around. Anyway, good to be back with you. And normally we start with feedback, but there's been a kind of hiatus in that, and that's for obvious reasons, probably. So I think we should launch straight in to the news side of things. And probably number one on my list would be that internet outage we had, just over a week ago, CrowdStrike.
CrowdStrike were involved around Trump and Russia. And as far as I read, in other words, you know, there might be more to it, CrowdStrike were saying, yes, there's a connection between Trump and Russia, yet didn't release any details as to the nature of it.
Yeah, and we know how that all turned out.
Yeah, we do. It was a complete load of bollocks.
There was no there.
Yes.
And that's why we can't trust anything they say anymore. That's another story. But when I was following that at the time, you know, because I saw the headline, it never affected me where I was, and I didn't get got a Microsoft based PC, Windows and everything, and I wondered if it would sort of ripple through to me. It didn't happen. But when I saw, you know, as this thing sort of was more reported, how widespread it was, something in me said, little voice said, is this like just a tech issue or is this something else? I'm wondering what you thought at the time.
Well, the reason it didn't happen for you is because you're not an enterprise. So CrowdStrike was typically installed on, corporate entities and big organizations in order to protect themselves from cybersecurity attacks. And so, you know, as I said with Alistair, that the irony was that CrowdStrike and the Falcon sensor software they create was designed to prevent exactly the thing that happened.
Right. Okay.
So it's like,
well,
the
that
cure,
worked out well, didn't it?
Yeah, the cure was worse than the disease, pretty much. And so now CrowdStrike apparently has been offering its partners a hilariously inadequate mea culpa, a $10 Uber Eats gift card as an apology.
What?
Yeah. So a more recent analysis by the insurance firm Parametrics has, they have said that it's cost Fortune 500 companies more than US $5 billion in direct losses.
Crikey. And it was a patch, wasn't it? Some sort of software patch that caused it?
Yes. So the Falcon sensor software basically phones home and gets updates, and it has to happen quickly in order to try and mitigate against any active exploit in the wild that's going around. So the update was basically junk, and the Falcon sensor software just assumed, because the update came from Home Office, that it was automatically okay. It didn't do any sanity checks upon the update. It didn't look at it and go, does this thing make sense? No, it just blindly trusted it, assuming that it was okay, and went for it. And then everything went pop.
Okay, that must have been a hell of a moment in wherever the CrowdStrike HQ is. Imagine that.
Yeah, that's quite a few brown pants moments going on there, I think.
Because they'd realise the potential enormity of that, wouldn't they, immediately?
Yes, and that thank you, CrowdStrike. You have caused the inspiration for today's Tech Tuesday topic that we'll get to when we finish the news. It's all about internet outages that have occurred in history.
Okay, so they're offering a $10 Uber Eats voucher to compensate? Well,
and so it goes a little bit further. An unnamed source had told the TechCrunch media outlet they'd received an email with the amended gift card to make up for the, quote, additional work that the July 19 incident has caused. And for that, we send our heartfelt thanks and apologies for the inconvenience. The email signed by CrowdStrike's chief business officer, Daniel Bernard, read. To express your attitude, your next cup of coffee or late night snack is on us.
Wow. Okay. I wonder who thought that one up as compensation, because otherwise they'd be on the line for huge amounts of money. And I guess there will be lawsuits, right?
Well, yeah. And well, interestingly, people are going, okay, this was pre-planned. This is everything we've been talking about. And here it is, it's happened. Maybe that's true. Maybe it's not. But apparently somebody on X had posted that somebody had placed a $2.3 million put bet on CrowdStrike with a strike price of $370 2 days before the outage occurred. So you kind of wonder, so was this someone's malicious intent? Was it some people just not doing their job properly that allowed such a poor update to be pushed through? Or is it dirty tactics? Is someone trying to erase the competition or even buy the company for cheap? Because it was 2010, something similar happened to McAfee, which killed the company. And then a few years later, Intel bought it.
Well, it's a bit of a gamble doing that on the off chance that, that could happen. You'd almost have to be able to, you know, you have a crystal ball handy and you're going to throw the money into it. It's a hell of a gamble. Paid off, obviously, in this case, but
it did.
How would you know? How would you know?
Well, you never do. And I'm wondering, I don't know. In fact, I'm prepared to bet Weird Al Yankovic doesn't listen to us, let alone Tech Tuesday. But if he is, I'd like to propose an idea to him for one of his parody songs. So I thought perhaps he could take the AC/DC song Thunderstruck and go, "You've been CrowdStruck."
Yeah.
I think he could use that.
With that riff.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. CrowdStrike. All right, so that brings us up to date on that, does it? But it's probably in motion still, so we'll hear more about that, I would imagine.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, Reddit. Money from Google for Reddit. What's that about?
So Reddit are set to pull in $60 million per year in a deal with Google to train their future models on its 20 years worth of user-generated content. So if you've ever posted anything to Reddit, you are likely to be helping train their next generation of AI models with your own words, pictures, and whatever memes you might have posted on there. So, and I doubt you're going to get paid for it if you have made such a contribution to Reddit.
You probably never thought your information would ever be used for that, because Reddit had been around for quite a while. At least say 20 years worth.
Yes.
I suppose it's in the terms and conditions somewhere that they could probably do that, I would imagine, or something like that. But I don't think many people would have signed up for that particular component.
No, and it's kind of, even though we know that because of this report that Reddit is giving their data for money to Google, there are other AI companies that typically have not answered questions around how your models were trained. So I think that can be the third thing that you don't ask. So the first thing is, apparently, this is historically, you never ask a woman her age a man his salary, or now an AI company where they got their training data from?
Yeah, right. Gosh. There's obviously a huge value in that information. I mean, 60 mil a year, that's
It felt cheap to me, actually, given the billions.
Why do you think they could have done a better deal?
Well, given the billions of dollars that gets invested into these things, and like, oh, here's 60 million, like, whatever.
Yeah, okay. But still, it shows you that that's very, very valuable information.
Oh, for sure.
When these systems are trained and take the information, the data that you just mentioned, I mean, how's that distilled into training? I'm just trying to get my head around that. How would that work?
It's probably an unsatisfactory answer, but it's complicated.
Okay.
They have models, and then they have to train the model. And you train the model based upon input. And so the input in this case is information from Reddit.
Yeah, so a lot of people comment, ask questions, deliver information over Reddit. And I suppose by now virtually every combination of everything you can think about has been shared on that platform. Is that the training, essentially? So yes. I asked some sort of bizarre out there question that's caught up in this data. Does that mean AI becomes, or the model becomes, aware of the parameters of that particular question? So if any version of it in the future comes up, it can draw on that, you know, original experience, let's say.
Yeah. So like, you know, if you might have seen evidence where people ask an AI system a question, and they're testing it because they already know the answer. And so they ask the AI a question and it gives the wrong answer. And then you go, well, no, that's not true. And then the AI goes, oh, I'm sorry. And then
update.
Well, it's like, okay, I've been caught out. I'll double down and then provide another answer. Go, well, hey, no, that's not right either.
So what happens when you get to, you know, almost the sum total of the knowledge, and at some point that you're getting close to that, I would imagine, the digitally stored knowledge? Basically, AI can deal with any question, any historical moment, any nuance of any comment. Is that where it gets to?
Yeah, well.
Gee.
When you find that people can control the data, then if they control the data, they control the truth.
Yeah, the elastic truth, yeah. Mm. Did I hear correctly last week that I guess it was some kind of announcement by Joe Biden from his desk? The people are saying, was he really at a desk? And he looks a bit different from earlier pictures of him in terms of his, you know, facial structure, etc. But that announcement was entered into one of the AI platforms, I think ChatGTP, and I saw that it came back 98% likely that it was AI generated from the AI itself. Same.
Yeah. They have got people having building systems whereby they are verifying the authenticity of the source. And what one of the things they look at are eyes, because AI images haven't got the eyes right yet. And I've seen a whole bunch of images and go, yeah, I mean, I can eyeball that. And I think pretty much anyone could. You could look at it and go, there's something not quite right about that. It's off.
Yeah, I used to do a lot of video production, so I'm very experienced at using keying, you know, Luma key, Chroma key, Alpha key, all the keys. And I was interested to examine that from that point of view because I'm familiar with it. And there was something about the hairline. Because the hairline is fine in detail, it's very hard to get an accurate key. At first glance, it looks okay, but you zoom up a picture, you look close, you can see the border around it. If it's diffuse, that's usually a setting to offset any, you know, sharp pixel edges around the key. And I have to say, looking at that, I felt that it might have been keyed, but with a soft sort of border around it, is what I thought. But I don't know. I mean, how do you know? Yeah. But I wouldn't be surprised, Steve. I wouldn't be surprised.
No.
So look out for the eyes. And how many fingers?
And the size of the fingers.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Because sometimes there's a term, I can't think of the name, it's like baby hands. It's like you get an AI generated person, you look at the hands and like instead of being, you know, a normal adult size hand, it's a size of a baby's hand.
Right. Yeah, well, that'd be a giveaway. We'd pick up on that pretty soon, wouldn't we?
Yeah.
Though people I think need to get educated to look closer at these pictures because it's easy to be fooled. It's so easy to be fooled. Yeah, and if you're not familiar with the tech behind it, you've got no reference point. It is so easy just to pass it off as, well, that looks normal.
Yeah, take it at face value, yeah.
Yeah, and then when the detail is pointed out to you, right, I see. But, okay, so Reddit, 60 million a year. I wonder if we'll ever see, you know, Reddit-type AI responses in the future from that. Using DNA to store data. Boy, you'd be able to store a lot of data using DNA, wouldn't you?
Well, yeah. I mean, some people have estimated that the worldwide data storage could be up to 200 zettabytes by next year.
I've never heard of that. Zettabytes. I haven't heard of that before.
Well, that's like 200 billion terabytes.
Oh, man. Okay.
So the people have been looking at other ways of storing data inside synthesized strands of DNA. So in other words, it's possible to convert binary data that's stored in like hard drives and stuff into the cysteine, how do you say this word, guanine and various other nucleotides. So unlike digital systems, if you're able to store it properly, DNA storage could last for millions of years.
Okay. And
it's also very dense and compact, with 1 gram of DNA having the potential to store hundreds or even thousands of terabytes.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
And the other issue, one issue at the moment with DNA storage, a read and write speed. So that's how fast data can be stored into the DNA and read back from it. So in 2018, Microsoft researchers were able to fully automate the process and they were able to convert data and fabricated DNA back again, but it could only do it at 5 bytes per second. So okay. five bytes a second is like probably like 1980s internet.
Yeah, but that's early days, right? So we can assume that that will just Moore's law would apply there too, probably.
Yeah, and there is a French startup company called BioMemory, and they've developed a semi-usable DNA storage card. It holds about 1 kilobyte of text, and it's the size of a credit card, and costs about $1,000. But it's definitely proof of concept.
Yeah. Okay. Gee. Okay, Super Bowl. Was it Alicia Keys who was the most recent performer at the Super Bowl? And was her performance altered in some way? What's all that about? That sounds weird.
Yeah, so the halftime concert, the Super Bowl back in February, I think it was, she was performing along with Usher. And if you were there in the stadium watching, you might have noticed that her performance at the time wasn't her best, and some people criticised her for having an off day. But if you were to then to go and watch the YouTube recording of it, you would not have noticed any difference.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So something that was a live performance has been shamelessly modified so that it must lead you to wonder, what can you trust?
Nothing.
Unless you were there, unless people were there and could report on it.
Has the, you know, the not-so-good performance been described? What was lacking? Because I like Alicia Keys. She's really cool.
Yeah.
And I know that you can make things perfect in a studio, but she's been around for a long time. And, okay, people have off days.
Mm.
So have you seen any comment as to what was off? Was she out of tune? Did she have some bum notes? What?
I'm not quite sure what it was, but Yeah, people were giving her a hard time about it. Like, personally, I'd rather see the version where she was having an off day, because at the end of the day, she's still human too.
Yeah, you know, if they're not glaring, you kind of gloss over the whole thing and edit it out in your mind anyway.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, you can't believe any damn thing anymore. And you just clean it up afterwards and no one's the wiser. Yeah. All right. So those are the tech news stories that are out there. Plenty more, but we only have so much time. Let's move to the main topic you mentioned early on when we were talking about CrowdStrike, internet outages. You see, I associate these grand internet outages, and I suppose this CrowdStrike one was really, what, the biggest so far, would you say?
That's what they're saying.
Yeah.
And, of course, what makes it the biggest so far is the fact that we've got so many more internet-connected devices and systems that we rely upon compared to even 10 years ago. So, like, there's a plethora of examples I could be talking about right now, but I've picked a few just because they were notable incidents in history. So I'm going to start off with one that happened in 1998.
Oh, that's called, going back. That's going back.
It is. Yep. It's called the Chernobyl Flash Memory Virus. So this infected Windows 95, 98, and ME operating systems. And it had scripts in it that could overpower the computer's CPU, which slowed down the machine. One of its most damaging things that it could do was that it would overwrite the flash BIOS chip in the machine, thereby rendering the hardware inoperable. So it would kill the hardware.
The actual physical hardware.
Yes. So when you hit the power button on your computer and electricity surges through it, before the operating system's even started, you have some software built into the machine called the BIOS, which is Basic Input Output Systems, what it stands for. And that has code on a chip. It reads that and it decides what to do as it starts up. Now, the reason why it's stored on flash memory is that when updates have to occur, you know, maybe there's bugs and that they have to be fixed, you can download an update and then stick it into this flash memory and you've got your updates.
Oh, okay. Yep.
So on machines that didn't have any kind of protection here, the Chernobyl virus tended to overwrite the flash memory, thereby destroying the code that rang when the machine started up, which thereby killed the hardware. So back then, it was called the Chernobyl virus because just by chance, it coincided with the 13th anniversary of the Chernobyl nuclear disaster, April 26, 1986. It reportedly caused about $250 million in damages and infected over 250,000 machines.
Now, the hardware isn't ruined, I take it. It's just can't sort of boot up, I imagine. Was it repairable at the time?
So you could take the hard drive out of the machine, plug it into a working machine and get it data. Windows, however, can be really irritated if you go change the hardware on. It's like, what do I do? The world's changed on me.
Yeah.
You could, if you were really committed, you could either take out, if it's on the socket, take out the flash chip, stick it into a writer, flash in some good code, put it back in the machine and start it up and carry on. But that's an involved process just as much as desoldering the chip off the motherboard and then repeating the process.
No, it wouldn't go there, no.
You wouldn't, but can you imagine if we had a Chernobyl flash memory virus incident happening in this day and age? Because the CrowdStrike issue, you could restart a machine into safe mode, delete a file that was causing a problem, start it back up and off you go, and then rinse and repeat that 1,000 times, according to one New Zealand bank that had to fix it. But if it went around killing hardware, that's a problem. A real problem.
Okay, so that was quite a while ago, and yeah, it sounds like sort of, as well as the anniversary, it sounds like a Chernobyl-style meltdown.
Yes. Actually. And then, like, just 2 years after that, another really big one happened in May 2000. It was called the I Love You virus, also known as the love bug or letter worm, and that was said to infect an estimated 45 to 55 million computers around the world.
Well, okay.
It was one of the most destructive malware outbreaks next to what we've experienced recently, which did cause billions of dollars of damage as well. What was interesting about this was that it relied upon social engineering tactics, and it exploited human curiosity and emotions, particularly the desire to receive a romantic message from somebody. And people who received it tended to assume the email was a genuine declaration.
Oh, so they click on it, and then the rest is history, right? Yeah.
Yep. Open the attachment, and then bang, things go funky from there on.
In that situation, how long have you got to stop it? Or as soon as it's open, it's over?
Pretty much.
Okay.
And the other thing is that you don't even necessarily know that it's happened.
Okay. Gee.
And until, you know, if it's something that sets up a payload to be set off later on, you know, particularly with the Chernobyl flash memory virus example, that got triggered on a particular date.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah. Also, what about when, if you turn your machine off and then back on, is that where things can, like this can kick in as well? You know, when you shut it down and then turn it back on? Because every now and then I shut my PC down, you know.
Yeah, sometimes such a thing can definitely kick off when you restart the machine, or at least that's when you notice it and go, this ain't working right. This something, we're not in Kansas anymore, Toto.
Nowhere near it.
Nowhere near it.
You can just imagine the evil geniuses, you know, rubbing their hands, knowing what's about to hit from their handiwork, you know, and then just watching it all happen.
Well, some people, and particularly around the I Love You love bug virus, apparently the guy who did it wasn't completely aware of the impact that it would have.
Oh, okay. It's interesting. Yep.
It was just like, okay, well, now this thing's got a mind of its own, and oops, my bad.
Serious punishment would have to come from an act like that, wouldn't it?
Yeah. It'd be the usual course of justice. And there's one other type of virus, if you want to call it a virus, that kicked off in 2013, and it still shows up from time to time, and that's basically a crypto locker style. At its peak between 2013 and 2014, it created an estimated $3 billion in damages, and that is when typically due to a phishing scam, something like that, you click on some open some attachment, click on some link, and then the virus encrypts all of your data, and you get some message saying, hey, hope you're having a lovely day. I've just encrypted all your data. If you want it back, pay me $1 million or pay me X amount in Bitcoin, et cetera, if you want to see your data
like
back.
Like a ransom, yeah.
It's a ransomware attack. So they're betting on the fact that the data they've encrypted is your only copy. Something similar to this happened to my brain wants to say the Waikato District Health Board.
I think you're right.
I think it was them. Yeah. As far as I know, they didn't pay anything. They just relied on their backups to get stuff back going. And it's really not a good idea to pay out the ransomware, because if you were to pay it, if you were to pay the $1 million or whatever, they go, okay, cool.
I'll do it again.
I'll ask for a bit more money.
Easy to walk over. Yeah.
Yeah. They're good for the money. I'll bleed them of a bit more before I give their data back, even if I bother to.
I wonder how many pay in the end.
I imagine some would have at first. They would have been a little bit desperate for it.
Yep.
And, of course, a lot of the other internet outages are actually intentional because they've been caused by governments and oppressive regimes. I mean, you've got the 2019 Kazakhstan, they did that. They shut down the internet for 5 days to try and prevent anti-government protests. India did the same thing for 9 days in the same year to prevent.
India?
Yep.
Okay.
That's to prevent protests against the Citizen Amendment Act. The Iranian government, also of the same year, did it for 7 days. North Korea in 2017.
Oh, North Korea. Do they actually have an internet, do they?
Well, apparently, yeah. But this was alleged to be a U.S. cyber attack, which was only for 9 hours. But Egypt did it in 2011. They shut down the internet, same deal for 5 days. You know, some of these outages are because you've got a government that's up to no good, and they go, well, we're going to thwart people's ability to communicate, to organise and rally, to protest. Because, and I've said this before, I don't know the context entirely, but if we refer to the documentary Star Wars Episode 1, The Phantom Menace, when there was a communication disruption, they go, this can only mean one thing, invasion.
Yeah. Okay, so there have been some pretty major, you tend to forget them, don't you, as the years pass, what has happened before.
To me, it's a bit like as somebody who has lived and breathed the Christchurch earthquakes, after you've gone through it, it's easy to go back to normal and stop thinking about it because, I mean, let's be honest, we all want to go back to what normal was. But then, you know, this is an FYI since you've just moved down south. You're living kind of close to the Alpine Fault, so be prepared for when that one pops its cherry.
I see that's the bit of fear porn around that every now and then in the media, that particular fault line. But I was in Wellington for the 7.8.
Yeah.
I remember that. And you'll remember it was 6.3 in Christchurch, but it's very shallow, wasn't it? So
shallow and close.
Yeah. So I know what that's like. I know what the power of that nearly 8 felt like. And actually driving down the coast, I could see where the seashore had come up. It's really obvious.
It is.
So, all right, well, I hope that doesn't happen while I'm here. They say when that lets go, it could be a 9.
Yeah, 8 to 9. I mean, it's a logarithmic scale, so it's 9 is what? Is it a million times more powerful than an 8?
I thought it was 10 times, but you probably know more than me. But, yeah, it goes up.
It's heaps.
Through the roof, yeah. It's heaps. The non-technical description is it's heaps and it's a train wreck, yeah, basically.
Yes.
All right. Well, like I said, I hope that doesn't happen while we're here. Maybe we should have put our studio at another place. I remember when I worked for RNZ for a long time, we had the archive, the radio archive in Timaru, because Timaru was identified as the least likely place in the country to suffer a major earthquake, long since been taken out of there, but it was for decades in Timaru, the archive.
Yeah, okay.
Mm. But that Alpine fault would hit that area too, I would imagine, if it let go. Anyway.
I think there'd just about be nowhere in New Zealand where you wouldn't feel it.
Yeah. I see White Island's been puffing away.
Yes.
And the Yellowstone geyser went ballistic and Mount Etna's erupting. Oh, that's for another day. So, all right. So anything more to talk about? I think we're up against time. I suppose there's really nothing you can do in these instances, particularly if it's, you know, targeting hardware, or has that been designed around now? They're not so vulnerable, the hardware items anyway, in your devices.
Yes, although vulnerabilities can and will be found and exploited. That's why it's always a good idea to have a plan B when plan A doesn't work out.
So the next time I get some sort of email or comm saying, I want to get to know you, leave it alone.
You say, well, so does everyone else. Get in line.
Yeah, I'll just stick to my hobbies. Thank you. All right, good to catch up again, Stephen. Great to be talking again, and we'll physically get together. We'll get you over to the Queenstown studio at some point. We'll do this live from our studio.
Oh, that sounds like fun.
Yeah, something we can do.
Yeah.
In the meantime, we'll be back with another Tech Tuesday week from now. Thanks, Stephen.
Thank you very much. See you then.
Loving what you're hearing? Well, the establishment hates it. And right now, they're conjuring up new ways to try and censor RCR. To ensure you never miss a beat of the hard-hitting news you've come to know and love, make sure you're on the RCR mailing list. Get connected now at realitycheck.radio/email.